And a very fine evening to everybody out there. This is Tom Harris. Welcome to Tom Harris USA, episode number 72, coming to you from beautiful Chicago, Illinois, where we are getting rain at the moment. It has been rather warm for the last few days, and we've had a lot of snow melt. And I just looked outside just now, and it's actually raining outside. Not real hard, just kind of drizzly and sprinkly out there. But it is still a little bit cold. I was out today and I didn't need my coat. I didn't need my winter coat anyway. I put on my fleece hoodie and that kept me plenty warm for the little bit of running around that I had to do today. Unfortunately, the warm weather that we've had for the last few days is probably not going to last. I know the weather forecasters here are notoriously bad. However, they are talking about having an accumulation of snow over the next couple of days. I'm going to make a prediction right now, though, is that snow is not going to stick because I think it's too warm out. And I have a feeling that we're just going to get kind of a slush because I've definitely noticed a difference in the air, you know, and just the feel of the air. And I think that really we're approaching the end of winter. You know, I don't know that. You know, it's a sort of a hunch just based because, you know, the air smells different. The air feels different, you know? Anyway, you may have noticed that I sound a little bit different. Now, this is because I'm not using the same microphone that I have been using. I went out and was looking at mics and I found this little clip-on. Now, this is a pretty cheap mic. Yeah, I have to say, it's not one of these really expensive mics. There's some things that I don't like about it, but for the moment, I'm going to try using this, and hopefully it won't have some of the problems that I was having with the headset mic. This is a 35mm plug that I can use with a mixing board, which I do not have yet. I am still in the market for a mixing board, but that hasn't happened yet. But I'm going to have to need to get one in order to do the live show, which I spoke about last time. I don't really have any specific topic set for this show, but I do have a piece of feedback here. This is feedback from our good friend Doug. Doug in Akeley, Iowa, is a longtime listener to the program. And Doug had some things to say about the discussion that I was having about time travel. And Doug writes, "So if I could go back to, say, the late 1970s as an adult, could I be a mentor to my younger self? Or would that cause a time paradox? Captain Janeway hated them things. They gave her a headache. I agree with just about everything Scott says for the reasons to go back. The late 70s were a great time for me when I was a kid. Like ham radio was more active, no cell phones. More places offered good low-end audio gear, other than the plastic Walmart hi-fi crap. And audio was real and you could hold it in your hand, not the crappy tinny-sounding MP3s that kids think is hi-fi today. Also, do not think that I would miss the internet much, because like back then, I would have had electronics, radio, hi-fi to get lost in. One bad thing about not getting the internet is not having access to email and alt news sources. And there would be one big difference back then. You could go outside and there would be kids outdoors playing. You just don't see that much nowadays. They're indoors getting brainwashed by their Xboxes and Wiis. When it comes to clothes, I was like you, a t-shirt and blue jeans guy. Great show." Thank you very much, Doug. Well, that is an interesting topic, the idea of going back and being a mentor to one's younger self. Now, I think that would create problems. Certainly in my case, I think it would create problems because I think that if it were possible, obviously, if I were to go back in time and try to be a mentor to my younger self, the hardest part of that process would be convincing my younger self that I am who I say I am. That to me would be very, very difficult indeed. And especially it depends kind of at what point in your life do you contact them? And I think that kind of the earlier you go back, the harder it becomes. Now I could see myself now, you know, maybe going back and mentoring my younger self at, you know, 18 or 20. And I think I would be actually more liable to recognize myself than I would have been at a younger age. Because obviously I look very different now than I did back in high school. But actually I look a lot like my dad, so maybe I would be able to convince myself. It's hard to say. But I think it's a really appealing idea, obviously, to be able to go back in time and try to keep yourself from making certain mistakes. And you talk about time paradox. Yeah, I mean, obviously it would cause a time paradox. It depends on how you are thinking of the time travel thing. But as I understand it, and of course this is all theoretical anyway, that if you go back in time and you do something that would alter the past, then the reason that you had for going back in the past to begin with doesn't exist anymore. Therefore, you never went back in the past. So the fact that anything got changed at all would suggest that that's not possible, that you can't actually go back and change your own past, because if you do, then there's no reason for you to go back in the past to begin with. At best, what would happen is you would end up with an alternate timeline in which things did change, but your actual timeline would never have changed. And I guess that's sort of the stuff of sci-fi. Star Trek notwithstanding, I don't think that they treat the time travel question obviously very scientifically, but that's not their business. They're trying to tell a story to entertain people. And obviously, you want to have a story that holds a maximum impact. Now, obviously, I don't remember a future version of me coming back in time, therefore it didn't happen. Unless you want to really get into this weird, I don't remember it because it was blocked out of my memory. In that case, it might as well not have happened, even if it did. So it's fun to think about, but I don't think that it's possible. Interesting choice, the late 1970s, and I agree. To a certain extent, certainly, that was a time to go back to. There would certainly be worse times to go back to. Though I have to say, when I think back to the past and think back over my life, the late 70s is kind of a blah time for me. It wasn't a time that I was particularly comfortable with. It was sort of the end of the disco era, which I hated. That whole disco era, 73 to 78 or whenever the disco era was kind of officially over. I didn't really care for that, at least in a sort of a cultural point of view. And even as time has gone on, I don't feel a lot of nostalgia for those particular years. Now that happened to be my sort of middle school and high school years, and I have a lot of nostalgia for those years in a way, because, that would be in more in a personal way. And, the friends that I had then and, actually had a really positive high school experience, always really enjoyed high school, had a lot of fun in high school. But at the same time, culturally, that era does not hold a lot of appeal to me. Now, back during that time, I was into comics. That was sort of my thing. That would not have changed, obviously. I was into music, certainly both playing and listening to it. And at that time, I was actually playing cello. And that was, reasonably good. I'm not going to say it was like a world-class cellist or anything, but it was something that I did. And basically, I was drawing, I was doing a lot of that because I really wanted to be a comic book artist. And I think I've talked about that on the show before, that at the time I was doing a lot of like comic book type artwork, creating characters, creating stories. Nothing very good, but, the typical fan type stuff and coming up with original characters and so forth. Now that also kind of crosses over with the time as I've talked about before, of my religious phase and having that entire set of influences going on in my life as well. And of course, I think about it now as if I had to go back to that time period as an adult, as I am right now, I could still find plenty of things to fill my days with. I don't think there'd be any lack of opportunity to waste time when I was a kid, I was one of those kids that spent a lot of time with his nose in a book. And I can still do that as an adult. I would probably be reading different things than I was reading back then, but I could certainly still do that. My hobbies would probably, continue to be more or less the same. I could still go long distance hiking. I could still travel, to different places. And in some ways it would actually be better because there were certain places such as Ireland that were a lot cheaper to travel to back then, even taking into account things like inflation. So, could I make a life in the late 70s? Yeah, sure I could. I don't see any problem there. And when you're talking about the media, you're talking about vinyl records, I think, here. You can actually hold the media in your hands. Well, you can hold a CD or a DVD in your hand. I don't see anything there that's all that different. Now, back in the day, I had a pretty large collection of vinyl, and I actually still own a lot of my records. I got rid of a lot of them, but I still have a lot of vinyl records that I can't listen to. Now, what's really interesting is that you're going back and I actually think of some of these tracks. And some of these things I've replaced on CD over the years and some of them I haven't. But there are certain songs, for example, where I can go back and think of it. You know, think of the song from memory, if it's running through my head or whatever. And I can still hear if there was a click or a pop on the record, or a little skip. I had a couple of records that I got secondhand that had little flaws in them. And I still think of the song and keep hearing that click or that pop in my memory. That was the thing that I really liked about CDs. And it took me a long time to embrace CDs. Because those early CDs, and I don't know if you remember that, you know, when CDs very first came out, somebody actually played for me, I think it was a Pink Floyd record that was on CD, and it was right after they were first released. And my honest thought about is that it sounded horrible. It sounded as though it were recorded in a vacuum. There was no ambiance to it at all. There was, you know, the acoustics were very cold. But that technology has improved so much over the years that I can't actually go back now and say that CDs now sound worse than the records back then. They sound a little bit different, but I don't think they sound necessarily worse. And digital recording, to be sure, whether it's on vinyl or CD or whatever, definitely sounds better than analog recording. And I still remember one of the very first digital recordings I've ever heard. I actually own it. It's a vinyl record. It was a digital demo recording, and it was released as a limited edition record. And it's the Empire Strikes Back Suite by John Williams. And I think it was only released on vinyl. I don't think they've ever bothered releasing it on CD. But it sounded excellent. I mean, it is fantastic, fantastic sound when compared to the actual movie soundtrack as it was released just on stereo analog recording. So I have to say that there are a lot of things I like about digital recording. And I, you know, as I go back and I listen to music on MP3, I'll be honest, you know, I think it sounds better. Yeah, I can't be too nostalgic about it. I know that there's some audiophiles out there, like Richard, or for that matter, maybe you, that disagree with me. But I happen to think that things really do sound better now in a lot of ways. Now, sometimes they're mixed in different ways or whatever, and you know, that's something that I could find argument with. But yeah, I certainly hear what you're saying though, Doug, and I agree with you to some extent. Now, just kind of closing off on your comment, you're talking a little bit about how it's very rare to see kids outside playing nowadays. You know, I think they're still there, Doug. I really do. I don't think that it's completely stopped, obviously, that kids are outside playing. I do think that there's a certain level of paranoia now that parents are not actually allowing their kids that kind of a freedom because they're afraid that they're going to get abducted, afraid that they're going to get molested or whatever. And I think that it's not completely unfounded, though. You know, look at the sociological studies, you look at the statistics that have been done and so forth, and you find that sort of crime doesn't exist really any more now than it did back when we were kids. It's just now that there's so much paranoia about it that I think it's the parents that are keeping the kids from having that kind of freedom that we had. I mean, I lived in not an inner city, but I lived in an urban area. We did have a park that was a sizable park near where I lived as a kid, and we spent a lot of time there. And we did actually spend a lot of time, you're thinking back as kids, we didn't spend a huge amount of time outside. We weren't outside all day long. And I think part of that is living in an urban area. And we tended to socialize in each other's homes and not run around too much. Now, during the summer, of course, we ran around a lot outside. We had an enormous amount of freedom, I think, compared but going back to my old neighborhood, as I've done from time to time, because I actually kind of lived in my old neighborhood as an adult, I still saw kids playing. I think that it, I don't know. I don't know if the problem has really all that much to do with the kids. I think that there are more distractions to keep kids indoors now, but I do think a lot of it is the parents. And I don't think that indoor distractions are necessarily any worse now than they were back when we were growing up. I know, for example, myself, I mean, I watched a lot of television when I was a kid, between the ages of, I'd say, about 8 and 12. Now, after that, we moved and we're living in Florida, and I think I did spend more time outdoors there, just because it was more warmer all year round, and we didn't have to worry so much about, you know, getting snowed on or whatever. But going back for just a minute to this idea of mentoring oneself as a younger kid, I guess the implication of that is that there are things about our past that we would like to correct or to change somehow. And even if it were possible to go back and give myself advice, like I said, I think that there would be a certain amount of resistance from my younger self to actually accept the word of somebody who basically is a stranger. And really, honestly, I'm not much like I was at 12 or 14 or whatever now. I'm in a very different person now, and that's because I've grown and I've, you know, my attitudes have changed, my opinions have changed. And, you know, despite my upbringing, I've turned out sort of the way I am. And I probably, like I said, would have been very suspicious of myself. And, you know, somebody coming, some fat old guy with a beard coming up and saying that I'm you from the future would, you know, just be the weirdest thing ever for me as a kid. But it does really feed into this whole idea of regretting something from one's past and maybe not seizing advantages that one had in the past. And I can understand that completely. I totally understand that. But could you really change that? You know, and I think back at the things in my past that I would change. And especially things like my marriage. And this is nothing against, you know, my ex-wife, because she's a great person. But looking back at the situation in retrospect, I don't feel the same way about it now as I did then. The thing is, you know, about the decisions that I made in the past, that maybe now I look back on and say, oh man, you know, maybe that wasn't exactly what I should have done in that situation. And trust me, there's a lot of that. And I think that everybody has a lot of that in their life. But would that actually change if I were to go back and do things again? I don't know. You know, certainly if I were just to grow up in the same time again, I think I probably, being me and the way I make decisions and so forth, probably would do pretty much exactly the same thing. I don't think there's ever been a really pivotal point at which I could say that I definitely conceivably could have gone off in a different direction, because every decision that I made, and, you know, as far as relationships, as far as, you know, the things that I pursued, all of those things made sense at the time. All of those things fit into generally the direction that I was going at the time. There was never anything really dramatic that kind of split me off from doing something I might otherwise have done. Things were rationally thought through, because I've always been, to some degree, at least, you know, fairly analytical about things. I kind of find it hard to believe that if I were to go back and live my life over again, and this is without any kind of outside interference or special foreknowledge of the future, would I have made decisions differently? Certainly, if I knew how certain things would work out, then maybe I would have made different decisions. But at the time that I made them, those decisions made sense in the context of what was going on in my life, and including things like my marriage, that nowadays I kind of look back and say, oh, maybe that wasn't such a good idea. But they made sense at the time. And really, that's the only time we have to think about it. You know, we don't, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but we can't look forward into the future, and therefore we can't make decisions on that basis. I guess over the years, what I've come to realize is that the decisions that I made and the things that turned out the way they did, they probably couldn't have really turned out any other way, knowing what I knew then. And as I've said, and I've said it privately to people like Scott, who I kind of exchange voice files with, and I've said it to other people too, is that basically I have very few regrets about my life. And there's a few. There's a few things that I feel bad about, or there's, you know, opportunities that I miss that I wish I could go back and do again. But I think that's just kind of a common reaction to life in general. I think everybody feels that way. I don't think it's just me. In fact, I know it's not just me, because I can think of several people who feel exactly the same way. And it would be nice to have some advice from the future, you know, back at that age. But like I said, I think I would have had a real hard time convincing myself. And all things considered, I mean, yeah, things have turned out relatively okay. You know, not that things are perfect. I mean, certainly, you know, I can think of several things right off the bat that if I could go back, that I would definitely change. One of those things is going to school. And I would have probably, you know, if I could go back in time, I probably would have gone to college right out of high school. I probably wouldn't have just languished for a few years, because what happened with me is, you know, I couldn't go to the school I wanted to go to. That avenue was closed, and, you know, my pigheadedness said, well, if I can't go to the school I want to go to, I'm just not going to go to any school. I'm not going to make other people happy because they blocked off this decision that was mine to make. And I'm not going to give them the satisfaction of seeing them have their way. And that's, I think, really, when you think about it, and thinking back on it, I think that is sort of the decision-making process I had going there. I didn't go off to, you know, Edison Community College or to Florida State or whatever, because I didn't want to study those things. I wanted to study the things I wanted to study. I wanted to go to the school I wanted to go to. And I have no doubt that if I had gone off to college rather than kind of trying to get into the workforce, getting married, all that stuff, I have no doubt that my life would have turned out very, very differently than it has. But as interesting as it is to go back and think about it and think about how things could have been different, things aren't different. I made the decisions that I made, and I did the things that I did, and I didn't do the things I didn't do, and there's nothing I can do about it now. So there's no sense in dwelling on it, and that's kind of how I feel about it. Though, like I said, as a mental exercise, I kind of wonder. Sometimes I do think, you know, what if I had gone into this or that? You know, what if I had avoided this particular situation? These things happen all the time, you know, and being analytical, that's sort of how I do it, you know. But it doesn't make any sense to look back at one's life and regret. I think that a lot of what life is about is actually making the best of what you have. And the things that may have happened to you in the past that aren't so wonderful, those things have happened. You can't go back and change it, so there's no sense in being bitter about it, and there's no sense in kind of regretting things, and just kind of have to go forward and, you know, find out what you can do to make your life better now. And that's kind of how I feel about it. Anyway, thank you, Doug. That's been a really, really good topic, and I really enjoyed talking about this. Now, speaking of alternate timelines, I kind of forgot about this, actually, but a couple weeks ago I watched the movie Watchmen, and as you all know, I do sort of do these reviews of comic book related movies from time to time, and this is just the most recent one that I've seen. And I actually liked the movie a lot better than I thought I would. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with Watchmen, it's based on a graphic novel by Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons. Came out in the, I think it was the latter part of the 80s, if I'm not mistaken. And it is considered one of those classic graphic novels, you know, sort of a reimagining. The characters in the story of the Watchmen were based on the Charlton comic characters that were acquired by DC Comics from the remains of the Charlton comic company in the mid-1980s. And Alan Moore proposed the story of the Watchmen as sort of a way to use these characters. Now, DC didn't quite think that they wanted to do this with the characters, because if you're familiar with the story of the Watchmen, it would have rendered most of these characters unable to be used in the future. So they had other plans, obviously, for these characters, and they went and did, you know, series based on the Charlton characters, but they gave Alan Moore a commission to actually write a miniseries, 12 issues, to do the story that he wanted to do with the stipulation, of course, that he make these original characters that were not actually the Charlton characters. Though, if you're familiar with the Charlton characters, you can actually see rather easily which characters they were supposed to be. So, for example, Night Owl was supposed to be Blue Beetle. Dr. Manhattan was supposed to be Captain Atom, and so forth. And that is kind of how these characters were originally envisioned. And this is a movie that I honestly thought would never be made. And the reason why is because this is a property that had been optioned by several different studios at several different times to do a motion picture of. But it seemed to me as though it would never happen. I mean, it was many, many years that this film was in the works. And the film was almost never released for reasons having to do with the movie rights that were unresolved or whatever. And it's odd to think in this day of litigation and lawsuits that they would have made this multi-million dollar picture without really having a very clear idea of who owned the movie rights to it. But that's how many times the property changed hands. They ultimately, obviously, they did resolve the problem because the movie was released. But interestingly enough, you know, I was a big fan of the graphic novel. Now, they couldn't do the graphic novel exactly the way it was originally written by Moore. Now, one of the problems with movies that have been based on properties developed by Alan Moore is that they've been generally pretty awful. And I don't know whether this is some sort of limitation in Moore's style or whether the studios are just too fucked up and they can't actually, you know, maintain the integrity of a project. Anyway, Alan Moore wanted nothing to do with the Watchmen film, and that's understandable, given Hollywood's track record of translating his work into film. I mean, how many people actually liked Constantine with Keanu Reeves? So it's not really all that surprising. And I kind of have this rule of thumb for comic book movies, is that the movie verse is not the same as the comic universe, and you have to change things to some respect in order to be able to do a movie of a property like Watchmen. There were some things about the story that were dated. They couldn't really get away with certain storytelling devices in a motion picture, because it's always tough, like, and I've said this before, it's always tough to take something from one genre and translate it to a different genre, even if it's also a visual medium. But it did seem to me as though they made a conscious effort to use the original panels of the graphic novel as storyboards, which in my opinion made for a very visually spectacular movie. It worked for me visually. And indeed, many, many of the images are reproduced exactly on the screen. And you saw that in other movies too, like Sin City, and also in, what's the other one, 300, where they actually do try to reproduce the actual comic book panels in the context of the film. In the case of Watchmen, I think they did a really good job with it. Now, some of the changes they made left me kind of scratching my head, saying, well, why the heck would they change that, of all things? You know, this is something they could have left the same. On the other hand, a lot of the changes that they made perfect sense. And I saw exactly why they would change it. Now, one of the things that I found a little bit regrettable about the film was they had to cut out a lot of scenes, and they had to cut out a lot of the scenes that actually bring life to this world that they live in. And this is scenes that don't involve the main characters. I do understand why they cut them, because at over 3 hours, this is a long movie to begin with. So you're trying to kind of save time wherever you can. And I really was pleased with the fact that they actually didn't cut nearly as much story out as they could have. And there actually still is a fair amount of the ambiguity and the nuance that there should have been. And with that, I am out of time. If you want to write to the show, I always love hearing from people. The email address is tom@tomharrisusa.com. This is Tom Harris in Chicago, Illinois, signing off. We'll see you next time.